Listen up, Drew.
Hi, John.
You think that you can sit over there behind your microphone and you can levy insults at me? You can argue with me? I am the Archive Heavyweight Champion, and I am coming for you.
I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Archive.
Our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
Anything you want, you got it. Anything you need. You got it. Anything at all, you got it, baby.
Drew?
Yeah.
I bet you didn't know that I was once on the highest rated cable television show, weekly,
yeah,
recurring show.
I feel like I knew this.
I don't think you knew this. I appeared on it.
I think
the highest rated weekly television cable series on TV circa 1998.
I think
I was on it.
That I knew this about you.
Okay.
I think you may have told me before.
Well, I don't know what we're going to talk about then.
Tell me about that.
I was in the audience.
Yeah.
For a recording of Monday Nitro. WCW Monday Nitro.
This is 1998.
I think so.
So were you on camera at any point?
I was on the aisle.
Yeah.
The entry aisle.
Yeah.
So these guys would walk out and the camera would be right on them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the distance over their shoulder, I would be gesticulating wildly. Yeah.
Did you have a sign?
I didn't. Not for that one. I didn't have a sign for that one. I had for another one. I did have signs. I made signs for a couple of them. Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
I've been to. You may not know this about me,
this
but I've
I
been
don't
to
think
like
I know.
Five or six live wrestling events in my life over the course
none.
Of my life.
I've been to zero.
Wow. Well, you've missed out, buddy. You have missed out on being part of a true cultural phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
That's a wrestling reference.
Yep. Is it?
It is. There's a guy, also WCW, named Scott Steiner, whose nickname was Big Papa Pump. This is around the same era. And
no, it wasn't.
He used to. I'll
His
see if I can.
His name was not Big Papa Pump.
It was Big Papa Pump, and he would cut these promos, and he didn't practice them enough to where he could actually deliver the lines very well. So he would always get tripped up. And one time he said, "Big Papa Pump is a physical phenomenon."
Wow.
I think he might have done that twice, actually.
He would have been my favorite if I had known about him.
Oh, he's great.
Big Papa Pump.
He was
Pump.
Pretty great. There are so many. So I don't know how we're going to do this.
Well,
I don't know
on,
how we're going to cover this
hang
all.
Hang on. We'll back it up because, you know, people may have seen the title of this episode, which I believe is professional wrestling.
That it is.
And they may think like Greco-Roman style or,
right,
you know, like Olympic
collegiate
wrestling. Right,
yeah.
Collegiate. What we're talking about is the phenomenon that started in the...
I would call it
early as the...
I think...
Late 70s?
Earlier than that.
Really?
Oh, it goes back way back before that.
Come on.
Yeah,
as
50s,
we know it.
40s, 50s.
As we know
as it. As we know it, I'm going to say it begins in the 80s.
Okay.
So we are talking about wrestling as sports entertainment.
Yeah.
Which is a phrase that was defined by the father of sports entertainment, the father of modern pro wrestling.
Who's that?
Vincent K. McMahon.
Yeah, all right.
Who was the... Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
That was close.
As I've recently discovered. His dad ran a small professional wrestling circuit in the New York, Connecticut area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way wrestling was in the United States for the
that's
bulk
the
of its...
That's the way it was.
For much of the 20th century. leading into the 80s. It was all these small territorial groups that would get together, and you would have like people who were famous in your region, and they would, you know, get up there and do their thing, right?
As it should be.
Well, when Vince McMahon Sr. passed away.
Yeah, the visionary.
Vince McMahon Jr.
The jerk.
Took over and realized that he could make a lot more money
if he had a
monopoly
on
all of these characters.
There's the problem. He's only interested in money, not the true essence of the sport.
He is a businessman.
In quotes.
The sentiment you just expressed was probably pretty popular around the time that he started doing that in the early 80s.
What?
When he started combining all of these little regional operations into one big conglomerate.
Let me ask you this. Before Junior took over and when you just had these regional circuits, was it actual wrestling? Or was it still a show?
It was still a show.
Start off as a show.
It was entertainment.
Yeah,
I think initially it probably started off as a pretty legit thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that sort of classic archetype of the boxer who throws the fight, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think that's probably where it started to evolve.
Like one night. Someone threw a fight and they're like, wow, people really enjoyed that.
Right,
a lot more.
There's actually a lot of value in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I don't think.
So some guy.
I don't know that it's ever really been a deep, dark secret. Maybe in the
initial
days. But I think even before the founding of the World Wrestling Federation, I think most of the adult public probably thought that wrestling was fixed.
Well.
Or at least that it wasn't a straight-on competition without any pre-planning.
Around the 80s, Vince McMahon conglomerizes,
mm-hmm. conglomerates
the professional wrestling industry.
Right.
At that point, is that the creation of the WWF,
yes.
The World Wrestling Federation?
Yes.
And was that, at that point, the only World Wrestling Federation?
I think so.
Okay.
I think there were other quote-unquote federations, but they were smaller in scope.
And where was it broadcast?
Initially, it was broadcast in the Northeast. That's where he started,
became nationwide.
Well, then it was everywhere.
But on
and
what
that was
channel?
That was the key.
What
that
channel was it? Pay-per-view? Was it?
I think initially it was like a syndicated show. So it was on for the St. Louis area. It was broadcast a lot on KPLR.
Okay, so
which is sort of not
network television.
It's a network show, right? It was on
syndicated.
Network TV, but it was syndicated. It wasn't. Strictly affiliated with any of the big three, like NBC, ABC, whatever. It was just
whoever
local station could purchase the rights to broadcast WWF show.
Okay,
and they were the first nationwide televised wrestling company.
Okay,
which is part of the reason why I think it worked for them.
Yeah,
and the other ones couldn't compete.
So the. The WWF in the 80s, was it meteoric in its ascension? Meteors fall.
Yes, they do.
Was it
rocket-like
in its ascension?
Yeah. Nah, not initially. I think it was a slow build.
Okay.
I think you
exponential,
can...
Exponential, though.
Yes, and you can really kind of point to one moment, one person.
A singular event.
Yeah, that tipped the scales. Hulk Hogan, a guy named Terry Bollea, I think his real name.
Okay.
He goes by the moniker of Hulk Hogan. He's traditionally been a bad guy in most of his wrestling career.
Really?
To this point. He's been a bad guy.
Really?
He's a hotshot, arrogant, pretty boy.
Yeah.
He signs up with the WWF. I think he originated in like Miami or Tampa or
something.
Yeah,
he originated in Miami.
The swamps of Tampa gave birth to Hulk Hogan.
His shirt was torn asunder by the water.
As he crawled out of the, yeah, the tree branches caught him, tore the shirt up. And he won the WWF championship.
From
the Iron Sheik.
Oh, I've heard this. I wasn't even in this.
Incredible turn of events. The Iron Sheik had only been the champion for like a month or something
Yeah.
And at that point, this was insane because champions lasted for years, you know?
Yeah.
So Hulk Hogan comes in and within a month, he takes the crown away from, well, not the crown, the belt away from the Iron Sheik, and he proceeds to galvanize the public into a wrestling stupor.
Did he?
with his 24-inch pythons and his saying of prayers, eating of vitamins.
Did he climb some sort of ladder? Like, did he have to fight a bunch of dudes to get to the Iron Sheik?
That's the thing. I don't think he did. I think at that time
they just gave him the fight.
It was a lot looser back then.
Yeah.
You know, it was you didn't have storylines so much as you did have feuds.
Yeah.
And the feuds were pretty fleeting. They didn't last very long. So I'm not exactly sure how quickly, you know, when he arrived in the WWF and when he got the title shot. I'm not sure exactly how much time had
from the Miami.
From the swamps.
Swamps.
Yeah. With his headband.
Still with some algae.
Well, that's why his hair is so
pond
white,
scum
blonde.
Hanging from his quads.
He is kind of oily when he comes out to the ring, so maybe that's where it came from.
How long did he hold the title?
For a long time. He set a precedent. He was champion for probably like 3 years, I think.
And when did
that first title run?
When did he famously face off against Andre the Giant?
WrestleMania 3.
Okay.
So now in between these two, this is where you can sort of chart that ascension.
Yeah.
Like, he becomes the champion. Okay. That's the beginning of sports entertainment becoming like a pop culture phenomenon.
Okay.
Because he is the icon of the WWF at this point. There are other people that wrestling viewers know, but Hulk Hogan breaks through the mainstream.
Right.
You know, one, he was in Rocky III. I think that was a key factor.
Was that after his win?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Or right around the same time, maybe.
Yeah. What
so
was his
those
name
two sort of
movie?
Thunder Lips. Yeah. So after with Hogan as the champion, the popularity is increasing, and Vince McMahon goes for broke.
Okay.
And he bets the farm. He didn't really have a farm. He bets the business
on
this crazy notion that he has that people will pay for a pay-per-view event to watch wrestling. The way that they will pay huge sums of money to watch a boxing event.
Sure.
He's like, we're going to do this for wrestling, and it's going to be huge. And he gets it at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And he gets Liberace there. He gets Mr. T there.
Hang on.
Oh, yeah.
So he's... How much did he know about his demographic at this point? Because I don't know if the...
you don't think Liberace's going to...
If the wrestling masses are clamoring for an appearance by Liberace.
That's the thing, though. He was going beyond the wrestling masses. He wanted mainstream. He wanted to get mainstream.
And everyone
attention.
At that point was like, Liberace.
Yeah.
Please.
It was like Michael Jackson and
I need
Liberace.
More Liberace. I feel like there's not enough. He's been on
Maybe
Match
he's
Game. He's
Maybe
been
he's
on...
big at the Garden. He's big at Madison Square Garden.
He was
Liberace
on Wheel of Fortune. He had just appeared on Comic Relief. Right?
Russell Simmons, Def Comedy Jam. WrestleMania is the name of it. That's what happens in 1984 or 85.
So there was a WrestleMania 1 and a WrestleMania 2?
There were. And they were big. Huge. I mean, he just gets super popular after
that.
Sure. Even more popular.
And then.
So WrestleMania 3, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
For the largest indoor audience ever assembled.
In
it was
anything.
At the Pontiac Silverdome,
ever,
I think.
Amongst anything.
Ever. It was like 97,000 people.
Never for any other event.
Ever.
Had that amount of people been...
Indoors.
Indoors.
I think that was the disclaimer. I think more people had been to, like, I don't know, like the Coliseum or something. Yeah. But this was, yeah, 97,000 wow. people. They broke indoor attendance records, and Hulk Hogan slammed under the Giant. He body slammed him.
Yeah. Did he win?
He did.
I kind of wish Andre had won that one.
Well, Andre got his chance.
Yeah.
A year later.
Yeah.
This is just going to be a recap of all of these events.
A year later
on Saturday night's main event, mm-hmm. which was an NBC show that would occasionally show wrestling. They would do it like maybe twice a year. Mm-hmm. And that was always like a big highlight for me because I got to stay up late on a Saturday night and watch wrestling because it didn't air until like 10 o'clock or 10:30. And so it's a rematch. It's Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant. And at the end of the match, the referee, I think what happened, the referee did like a really fast count.
Oh.
Andre pinned Hulk Hogan and did like a really fast count. And then he was like, oh, Andre's the champion.
Yeah.
And Hogan's like, what are you talking about? You know, and I mean, he's not saying this. He's like, you see him express his frustrations to the referee. And then all of a sudden, another referee comes out and it's the same guy.
What?
It's twins. There was an evil twin. The referee who did the quick count was an evil twin. He wasn't supposed to be the ref. He's an evil twin. Yeah. So that threw everything into chaos. Nobody knew what was going on. This is, I guess if I can bring this back into the more general discussion, this is what wrestling is good at.
Yeah.
It's consistently raising the stakes in ridiculous ways.
So in the 80s, like that fervor, you know, builds, right? And we start to get like Hulk Hogan was a character, you know, and a
well-defined character
and, you know, a caricature, if anything, right? And so like that begins to become what is successful. And
everything shifts that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to succeed in wrestling, you've got to be over the top.
Macho Man.
Right.
Randy Savage, the Ultimate Warrior.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Ric Flair.
Oh, God. Nature Boy?
The Nature Boy.
What a stupid name. He used to do that thing. Yeah, woo! Yeah. So
he was sort of the Hulk Hogan of the other wrestling federation at the time, which was the NWA, National Wrestling Association, or something like that, which then eventually kind of became WCW.
Okay.
Which, so.
Now, before we get into this.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell I've been looking forward to this one?
I know. No, I have too. I think this is a fun topic. Well, I was going to maybe we should continue in this vein, sort of the taxonomy here. So, you know, the WWF gets huge, right? Meanwhile, the NWA is occurring, right? And that's sort of a smaller institution.
Well, there was like the NWA, which I think was predominant in the South.
Yeah.
Like they tried to compete with the WWF. And eventually they did sort of get their own thing.
They become successful with the WCW.
They do, but not until they were basically done. Okay. Or at least they weren't a challenge to the WWF.
Right.
They didn't become a challenge until the mid-90s, early to mid-90s when Ted Turner bought
them.
And turned it into WCW.
So is that on TNT?
Yeah, that's when he started. I think maybe it was on TBS first. I'm not sure. Well, and that was the thing. They were broadcasting TBS or TNT. One of them was broadcasting the NWA shows. Mm-hmm. I think it was NWA at that time. They were broadcasting those shows, but the ratings were not anywhere close to what the WWF was doing. And they were following the same model. You know, yeah. They had clearly delineated lines between good guys and bad guys, ridiculous characters, goofy costumes.
Yeah.
But they weren't anywhere near as successful as WWF. A couple of things conspired to change fortunes at that point.
All right.
This is what became what was called the Monday Night War.
Yeah.
So now whether you believe this or not. Yes.
Raw is war.
That's yes. WWF Raw was on Monday nights on USA.
Yeah.
From 8 to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time.
From 9 to 11. 11 p.m.
Eastern Time.
Oh, I was going to say, didn't WCW's show start at 9?
It started earlier. It started an hour early.
They were at 7.
Yes.
Till 10.
And then eventually they expanded it. They expanded it to a three-hour show. It's crazy. No, it's great. So depending on who you ask, the story goes that Ted Turner buys WCW, and the first thing he does is he calls Vince McMahon, and he says, "Vince, I'm in the wrestling business."
Nice.
And Vince McMahon's like, "Well, that's great."
Yeah.
Now, it's great if you listen to Vince McMahon tell this story, because he says, "Well, that's great, Ted. I'm in the sports entertainment business.
Oh.
You let me know how the wrestling business does."
Oh, wow.
These two egos were
so
opposed. So you've got Ted Turner buying all of the talent from WWF.
Mm-hmm.
They're building these guys into superstars.
Nice.
And then Ted Turner swoops in and buys them. Whoa. And brings them over to WCW.
So this is
like mass exodus of all the big guys. Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, who else? Brutus
the Beefcake Barber.
Brutus.
Is that his
couple
name?
Of guys, Diesel. He goes away and all these guys go to WCW.
They change their names.
And they change their names because the copyright. WWF started trademarking these names. They couldn't do it for Randy Savage because that was his name. Hulk Hogan, he owned the trademark to that.
Hulk.
So all these guys go to WCW, and suddenly the ratings start to shift. So people start following them, viewers start following them over to WCW and Monday Nitro. And WWF, to combat that, they start they try a bunch of absurd stuff, and eventually what they land on is adding a bit more of an edge to their stories and their characters.
Which one?
WWF.
Okay. You have these two things now occurring at the same time, right?
Right.
WWF.
Head to head.
WCW.
Yeah.
Which I remember because I had friends who, you know, watched wrestling. I never got into it. I could never. I tried, you know, at various points, tried to sort of, you know, ingratiate myself because I had several friends who just like were obsessed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd be over at one of their houses the night of, you know, Monday night, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be so bored out of my mind because like WCW, I guess, would come on, you know, around 7. And like whatever we had been doing was.
It's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if I could either go home or I could stick around and, you know, watch, and I would get confused because, you know, at a certain point they start switching the channel
during
commercial breaks. And I'm like, wait, what's, because I didn't realize at the time there were two different, leagues,
going at the same time.
Yeah. And so like I was, or they'd be recording the other one to watch later or what have you. So those two things are happening in concurrence. And then eventually, what happens? Because no longer, right?
It continued for probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
The reign of WCW is short-lived because WWF quickly decides they need to start, they got to up their game.
Yeah.
And I should mention, this is a good point to mention, this got so heated, and you got to keep in mind, too, these guys are all friends, like, behind the scenes. The wrestlers, for the most part, you know, like they know each other.
Yeah.
They may not be buddies, but they know each other.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, people in the American League of Baseball know the National League players.
Yeah,
So there, no one really knows exactly who's responsible for this, but eventually leaks start getting out about each week's programming. Yes. So people on WWF know about what's going to happen on WCW and vice versa. And so they start actually mentioning this on the show. Like, in order to keep people from switching channels, they'll have the announcers say, if you're wondering what's going on our competitor shows, here's what's happening.
Whoa.
And then they'll throw out some kind of big spoiler about what's going to happen, you know, in the next hour. Yeah. So that's how heated it was between these two. They were actually, like, doing these low blows on national television.
Wow.
Yeah. But WWF, they figure out the way to get people interested is to go extreme. And so they entered what is called commonly the Attitude Era.
Oh.
Yeah, not nearly as cool as extreme.
Yeah, I feel like that's the easy extreme. Well, we could have called it the Extreme Era, right?
Yeah. Extreme Era?
Attitude Era.
Attitude Era.
All right, go on.
Signified primarily by who I guess is maybe the second most popular WWF star after Hulk Hogan.
I should try to guess.
Go. Who do you think?
The Rock.
No. Close. Good guess. The Rock is the Macho Man Randy Savage to this person's
Goldberg?
Hulk Hogan. No, he was WCW.
Oh. I don't know.
Maybe he wasn't so popular. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Of course. Of course. What am I thinking?
The Rattlesnake. Stone
Cold
Steve Austin.
And he has his own line of ice cream shops now.
Does he?
Yeah, the Stone Cold Creameries.
Carried out of the ring. I told him, I said, you know, you sit there and you thump your Bibles and you say your prayers and it didn't get you anywhere.
Get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass. Steve Austin's time has come, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Well,
the next night. Yeah, he was, yeah, okay, of course, I'm an idiot.
So Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, with his sort of anti-hero tactics, begins the turning of the tide back to WWF, and his thing. So in the WCW, it was like Sting versus the NWO, right?
Yeah.
In the WWF, it became Austin versus Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Probably the most brilliant thing Vince McMahon ever did. I mean, he's had some really good ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a pretty smart guy. He's had some really stupid ideas too, mm-hmm. but he has had some good ideas. But the best idea he ever had was to make himself a character and make that character a bad guy.
Right.
So he represents the corporation, the WWF corporation, and Austin sort of represents the everyman.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very easy to identify with Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, he's a very sort of not necessarily lowbrow, but he's just very almost like a folk hero kind of.
Yeah, he's salt of the earth. He's blue collar.
Yes, blue collar, exactly. And McMahon is this, you know,
he's the man.
Cultured Ivy League. Yeah. Yeah, he is the man. And that feud it lasts for, I don't know, maybe.
Is he cultured?
he represents a moneyed background.
Yeah.
He represents, he's the Wall Street of this dynamic,
right.
You know? So that feud lasts for a couple of years at least. And it resulted in some of, like, the best moments, most memorable moments of in all of wrestling history. And then eventually that gave way to The Rock. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I will probably end up somewhat diminishing the accomplishments of The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
But I do. So I feel like The Rock is maybe a little bit overrated.
Hmm.
And I don't think he would have ever been as successful as he was had Stone Cold not been there at the same time or a little before to kind of lead in. Because they had a big feud too.
Right.
And that was arguably maybe the peak of the WWF, which at this time had become the WWE.
Right.
After they were sued by the World Wildlife Federation.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the World Wrestling Federation existed first, didn't it?
It did.
That's
load. I think. Yeah,
if that's
I'm
the case,
sure.
I'm all for the World Wildlife Federation and their cause.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, the name was taken. The acronym was not yours. It's kind of ridiculous to me.
It is. That shows you what kind of a kind soul Vince McMahon is. Or just not interested in paying for legal fees.
Right. So when do... Now, because I know that eventually both organizations are struggling and they eventually join up, right? Essentially.
Not exactly.
Doesn't Vince McMahon buy the WCW?
Yes. At the very end of the final Monday Nitro on TNT,
which is
the WCW program.
Okay, WCW.
Right. The word had gotten out at that point that the WCW company was now owned by WWF.
Mm-hmm.
But in the storyline within the show, that hadn't been acknowledged.
Okay.
So at the end of that show, they made an announcement that they were switching over to a broadcast from the WWF.
Yeah.
Of Vince McMahon making an announcement.
Yeah.
So at this point, you have two different shows showing simultaneously, one on USA, Monday Night Raw, which is the WWF, and Monday Nitro, WCW.
And Raw's just starting, right?
Raw's just starting. Nitro is ending.
Yeah, like not starting as in, not like Nitro's the show, but like time-wise.
The episode is ending.
The episode is ending,
right.
And Raw's episode is beginning.
Is beginning.
Yeah.
McMahon shows up and says, I have this special announcement.
On Raw.
Yes.
On
yes.
Raw.
He is in the stadium at Raw. And he's being broadcast on a television
at
in
Nitro.
The arena at Nitro.
Okay.
And likewise, they're showing the arena at Nitro in the stadium for Raw.
Right.
And he says, you know, I've purchased WCW. Meanwhile, at Nitro, Vince's son, Shane McMahon, comes out.
Walks out.
And he's been in storylines in the WWF before at this point. He walks out. So you have him in the ring at Nitro and Vince McMahon in the ring at Raw.
And has Shane ever appeared in Nitro or WCW at this point?
No.
He's always been
WWF.
WWF.
Yeah. So, of course, the Nitro guys are like, what?
It's Shane. But they all know who he is.
Of course, he announces that a McMahon did purchase WCW, but it wasn't Vince McMahon.
What?
It was Shane McMahon. So this is how they lead into that storyline.
On Vince McMahon's face, right?
He's so good at incredulous looks.
Well,
like,
good
he just can't
in quotes.
Believe. Right, yeah. He does a great exaggerated look of shock. Yeah. So that's how they lead into the consolidation of the two.
Okay.
Yeah. But now, before we... And this is sort of where my familiarity with those two sort of ends.
Yeah.
At least until recent. I've started kind of watching it again. I'm trying to get back into it. But this is a good point to acknowledge that... There is another faction of recent vintage that it never quite got as big as WCW or WWF, but it definitely ECW.
ECW.
Yes. ECW was sort of the underground, quote-unquote underground faction.
Barbed wire.
They didn't have a national TV thing, but they did have...
Did they have barbed wire?
They had barbed wire.
On their logo?
ECW stands for Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
And so their shtick was to go absurd with the things that they would physically inflict on people.
Okay.
Yeah. So ECW made its name with like barbed wire matches where people would hit each other with barbed wire. Or they would bring tables into the ring and they would hurl people through the tables and stuff. And now a lot of this stuff got adopted by the WWF after the fact. And in fact, ECW was eventually absorbed by the WWF.
Oh, okay.
So they own all of them now. So some of the most notorious storyline moments belong to the WWF.
Right.
Because they had, you know, Austin and The Rock. They have these characters, right?
Yeah.
Very well articulated characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so those moments are WWF sort of hallmarks.
Right.
ECW has crazy feats of physical brutality
right.
for which they are known for, where the guys would like throw themselves off of the rafters in these arenas and fall 30 feet or whatever through a table.
Right.
Yeah. Or they'd set themselves on fire. Or, yeah. I don't know if anybody ever died in ECW, right. but somebody did die in the WWE.
How?
Dropping from the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Who?
Owen Hart. He was Brett the Hitman Hart's younger brother. He was. They were doing some thing. I don't remember what character he was playing at the time, but it was in a pay-per-view presentation, and the lights went out, and he was supposed to, when they came back on, he was supposed to drop, and his harness failed or something, or it wasn't fastened correctly, and so he just literally plummeted without any kind of safety harness or whatever.
And did that show, essentially, did they stop the show? And
no, they actually kept going.
Wow.
Yeah, they carried on. They moved him out and
they removed
carried
him.
On. Yeah.
And then, man, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So as of today, 2013, what is the landscape? What's the wrestling landscape? Is it just the WWE?
Basically. I mean, you have there are still smaller independent factions. Okay. But and they do like they're on TV, they're on the internet, right. you know, but they're as far as like a cultural force, they're nowhere near what the WWE is.
So I've a few things, you know, that your history of of wrestling triggered. The concept of good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
They all seem like bad guys to me. Yeah. You know, and I admittedly didn't really watch it, but none of them seemed good to me. They all seemed like, and this is maybe my own perception, but they all seemed like sort of loudmouthed, arrogant jerks. And that they, you know, no one was really like, well, here's my question to you. What does it mean to be good in wrestling? Because who's in trouble, you know? Like, who are they protecting and or what are they protecting?
It varies. And it's all a matter of relativity.
Yeah.
You know, because so the good guys are sort of defined by the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's sort of unspoken codes, right? So, like, if you do not interfere with matches and if you do not hit certain other good guys, you're a good guy.
Okay.
You know, but if you... You know, you do these
you
things.
Fight
if
dirty.
You break rules, right, then you can be considered a bad guy. So, and it's like I said, it's based on who is understood to fit those roles currently.
Yeah.
That's how a new person or someone who is transitioning, that's how they define themselves.
So the NWO, for instance, is a faction of bad guys.
Yeah.
What's the threat?
They.
Like, if they're allowed to take control, will they, like, beat up everyone in the audience?
Right. Well, yeah, they'll jump the railing and they'll hit fans. And
is it? I mean...
No, it's you know, breaking up the status quo.
Well, who says that's bad?
Well, the...
What is the status quo?
The process of traditional wrestling.
All right.
Yeah. yeah, and that's a moving line, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that is so as that whole attitude era evolved, now, like, you know, even the good guys are expected to break the rules.
Yeah,
you know,
that's well, just, the bad guys are the man, right?
Yeah, in a lot of ways,
Vince McMahon.
Often, yeah.
The other thing, and this is a broader idea, but I'd like to get your take on it. So, you know, growing up and knowing some, you know, friends of mine who were so into this, and, you know, I was always confused and never, at least at that point, never sort of understood what their investment was. And I guess what I mean is, like, you know, I knew, and it was very clear that this is not real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fighting was all staged, and there was no they were acting, and you know,
right.
And so as a kid, I always thought, why people are idiots? This is fake. Like, why are you, you know, clearly this isn't real. Why are you into it? You
right.
know? And you know, now I understand it wasn't about it being real or not. It was a show like any other show. Right.
It's
right?
a narrative. Yeah.
What, but I guess there's the, maybe the line is blurred more in that they don't, while they don't say to you, the viewer, like, this is real. It's all, you know, it's all happening.
Right.
They are also not saying this is fake. You
they
know
remain
I mean?
In character.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's sort of theater.
It is. Yeah.
In a way. And that was always what sort of threw me and why for a long time I was like, how can anyone get into this? It's so fake.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the viewership has... do you think they care about... I think... they wouldn't care that it's fake because, you know, that's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think they care about authenticity in terms of like it looking real as it can? Or are they, do you think it's more about the storylines, the narrative, like as long as that remains outlandish and exciting?
Right. Entertaining.
Does the you know, day to day look and feel of the wrestling, whether it looks very real or not, mm-hmm. matter?
I think that totally depends on the person.
Yeah.
Which is the thing, like, there are a lot of, it's an absurd statement, but there are a lot of nuances to mm-hmm. the culture of this, you know? So there are people who do look for that, who judge the athletic portion of
sure.
this based on the authenticity.
Which, and I,
like,
I wanna
how
make
well can you sell this move
yeah.
to make it look like it's real? That's, a lot of people judge it on that.
And I just want to say that... I don't say the fake things take away from the athleticism or like these, you know, it's clear that these people have to be in peak
right.
physical condition to do this and make it work.
You are concerned about getting,
I want
to
get beat up. What if
in the comments,
Stone Cold comes
yeah.
after me?
People are just going to tear you apart.
Yeah. And...
yeah. So they, there are people who look for that. There are people, I think, who are just interested in that,
the
melodrama.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how ridiculous it gets, you know, and really it is, it's been this way, I think, for probably the last 10 years where it, you could take the physicality out of
yeah.
it, and in large portions they have.
Yeah.
And it's just
show.
The melodrama. Yeah.
Well, I, you know, what amazed me is it's this, it would be this 3-hour show, mm-hmm. right? And when I was over with friends and they're watching this, I'm like, when do they wrestle? Because it
right.
seemed like a dude would come out, you know, and they'd play his theme song as he walked. Like, let's say The Rock comes out,
uh-huh.
right? And it's like, can you smell what The Rock is cooking, right? But then he walks out, and he's got the belt over him.
Uh-huh.
And he's in, like, civvies, you know? He's got his shirt on and his pants.
Right. His, like, track pants.
Yeah, and he walks out there, and he, you know, does a little tumble onto the ring, and he stands up, and he has a microphone. And he's,
right.
Like, and he starts talking, and like, I didn't realize that he was just going to come out and talk.
You thought he was coming out to wrestle.
Right. He's not wrestling that night.
Right.
Like, he's just coming out to further his storyline, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and I was like, and that really confused me. I was like, why are we watching this? He's talking.
But that's the thing. That's another component of
right.
it. And that's, and in essence, that has become one of the most important skills.
Mm-hmm.
Skills. Talents of the last, you know, 20 years or something is
yeah.
how well you can deliver a promo on
yeah.
the mic, you know,
yeah.
how well you can play the audience
yeah.
and how well you can use your words and use your mouth to
right.
not only like
or
advance the storyline, right?
Or your
not only
or your elbow, right? The
yeah.
people's elbow.
The people's elbow. Yeah.
What an amazing name. For his elbow.
Easy, big fella. Yeah. Easy. Admit it, Lillian. You get wet. With perspiration. Standing this close to The Rock. What do you think about wearing The Rock's brand new electrifying t-shirt? It doesn't matter what you think.
You will wear it, and you will like it. Here's The Rock's brand new electrifying t-shirt. Matter of fact, SmackDown Hotel. Check in for one right across your head. And here's The Rock's brand new people's elbow pad. You hold it right there. Don't move, you puppet. Would you like to try some of The Rock's? Strudel. Would you like to hear Coach sing Barry Manilow?
At the Copa, Copacabana, yeah, the hottest spot north of Havana.
Sweet cream on an ice cream sandwich. What in the blue hell are you doing?
The most recent thing that you showed me is where I, an instance where I'm like, you know, do people care how real this looks, you know? Uh-huh. And that was the incredible piece of theater where, like, the one guy was at his dad's funeral or something,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. So you're talking about the Big Boss Man.
Big Boss Man Beefcake Party.
Was and that the Big Show. The Big Boss Man and the Big Show. Who's two separate guys.
Oh.
The Big Show, his father had passed away.
Big Boss Man.
In the storyline. No, Big Boss Man's separate.
He's a cop.
That's his story. Yeah. Yes.
So Big Show is at the funeral, and he's true to his name, is a large man.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's surrounded by small normal folk, as they at a in a cemetery, right?
Right.
And they've got the tent up, and they're doing, you know, the funeral.
Right.
And suddenly, a police car drives onto the cemetery grounds
with a giant megaphone. I'd like to point out
it was the Blues Brother car.
Yeah,
Blues Brothers car. It wasn't a police car,
right?
It was the Blues Brothers car, which is a police car, or was
that's
formerly
been retrofitted.
Like as part of the Blues Brothers narrative. They've retrofit this police car, and they put a giant megaphone on it at one point.
Right.
That literally is the car they're using for this, by the way. Right?
Yeah.
And
I mean,
so,
I know that it's the actual car, but it's designed
it's not,
to look like
it's
it.
It's the one that they use on the Universal Studios
That
lot.
Could be it.
Like the show, because they do a Blues Brothers show at Universal Studios.
Right.
Where they show up, and they do a little show on the street. In the park.
Yeah.
So there must be using that car or something for this. So that drives onto the lot, and isn't he like saying something into the megaphone?
Yeah, he's
like,
he's,
Big Show's a jerk.
Yeah, he's yelling stuff. He's taunting the Big Show from his moving vehicle.
Big Show gets mad, right? And he comes out there to confront Big Man.
The Big Boss Man.
Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
And they fight, and he sort of like demolishes Big
Show. Well, I
think
what happens, he just sort of drives through Big Show. He just
and Big Show's on the ground for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, recovering.
While the rest of his family comes and tries to help him up, including like Nana Big Show, right? And whilst this is occurring, everyone's backs are to the tent.
Yeah. Where the casket is
has yet to be lowered.
Right.
It's on this sort of green plinth.
Right.
Right.
Plinth.
Pedestal.
Good word.
Platform. AstroTurf.
Yeah.
Right. And Big Boss Show, Big Boss Man, he, upon pummeling Big Show, drives away towards the casket. He stops the car.
Right.
Remember, everyone's attending to Big Show.
Right. No one's around the casket.
A man in peak performance, by the way. Like, a man who is extremely physically fit.
Right.
Right? And all these norms.
And should be noted, hasn't actually been struck by
right.
a car.
but cannot seem to get up.
Right.
And while everyone's distracted, Boss Man, he takes a chain and connects it to the casket and connects the other end to his car, and he drives away, starts to drive away. And just as he does, Big Show gets up. Miley musters the strength.
He's got
maybe
the
bolstered
strength.
By the sight of his father's casket being pulled
dragged
away.
Off.
Right? And he runs and leaps onto, well, leaps. He positions himself onto the casket as Boss Man slowly and carefully
drives away with the casket.
Well, you wouldn't have hit any tombstones or anything.
With the casket and Big Show in tow. And Big Show just cannot take the, you know, probably what, 10 G's of force being applied to him by the phenomenal speeds exhibited by Big Boss Man in this police car. And he just simply tumbles off of the casket. He can't hold on.
No, no.
I was amazed. Like, so if you were to describe that event without my, you know, sort of biting tone, right? You, it sounds awesome. Right. And I think we talked about this. Like, you can picture them in the show, or like the writer's room. Like,
yes.
I got a really great
sort
idea.
Of pitching this idea.
Like,
Big
Show will be at his dad's funeral and Boss Man will tear off, you know, the car will tear into the cemetery, knock down some, you know, various headstones and
mud,
stuff.
Dirt flying everywhere.
He'll careen into Big Show, send him flying. Like, everyone's like a freak out. They're going to run over and try to help up. And while that's happening, Big Boss Man's going to, you know, attach the casket to his car, drive off, you know, with the casket in tow, and Big Show's going to jump on it, but he can't hold on. He's going to get thrown off. It's going to be incredible. And it sounds awesome.
Right.
Right? I will say, that sounds so cool.
Yeah. That's entertaining television.
But then the logistics.
The execution.
Yeah. It's just, it's like middle school production.
And that's the way it always is.
Right.
I mean, it's there have maybe been like a handful of really convincingly effective, you know, executions of stuff like that, you know. But again, I think that's part of the charm.
Yeah,
of it,
I agree.
Now, or at least it has become part of the charm.
I have to applaud the ambition.
Yeah.
There was a wrestler, I think this is like early days. He was called Tugboat. He was like a big dude, like a big fat guy.
Yeah. Tugboat. He was Tugboat.
And, wore,
and then he was Typhoon. When he turned bad, he became Typhoon. It was Typhoon and Earthquake as a tag team. They were the natural disasters.
Yes. I like it.
And Typhoon. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned him.
Yeah.
Tugboat, then Typhoon. When he was making his debut in the WCW, it's probably the most ridiculous.
He was around that long?
He was around for a long time. The most, arguably the most ridiculous moment in wrestling history.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a competition
the bar
right there
is
for
high.
That. Yeah, yeah. He was introduced, he was a character called the Shockmaster.
Oh.
And we will link to this clip because it's great. So he was the surprise participant. Uh-huh. He was going to be a teammate for Sting and somebody else at this big pay-per-view event.
Yeah.
And they introduce him. They're like, our partner is going to shock you because he is none other than the Shockmaster. And he's supposed to burst through this wall, this, you know, particle board wall or whatever. And there's going to be pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
And he's going to like really make this intimidating impression.
Yeah.
Right. He comes through the wall, but he trips.
Oh, so
he trips over the base of the wall, falls through.
Oh, wow.
Silence. The announcers go silent.
Yeah.
And you see him, like the camera cuts away, and then you see it when he comes back, he's putting his helmet back on, and he like tries to shake it off.
Oh, no.
And then he says his thing, you know, in a really intimidating voice.
Yeah.
And all he was, he's like this, he's a dude in a burly, like, leotard with a bedazzled stormtrooper helmet.
What?
It's absurd. It's so absurd.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And that touches on something else, the announcers, who are as much part of the show, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Like, and they're constantly in, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're always
they set the tone. Yeah.
Right?
They set the tone for what you're supposed
to
be experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a great lineage of announcers, too, over the years. Macho Man was an announcer.
That's excellent.
Jesse the Body Ventura, he was a wrestler, and then he became an announcer, commentator.
And then he became a...
A governor?
Governor.
Yeah.
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 It's something.
It's a phenomenon.
It's a phenomenon.
It is a phenomenon.
I feel like we'll probably catch up some more with this when we get to it then. them.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff. I mean, I didn't even talk about the ice cream bars.
We'll leave it for another time. Right. Put it in the archive.
So if I set up a meeting with you and Charmel, and I'll be the modifier.
You mean moderator?
Shut up!